Welcome to The Side of the Crime, your weekly Florida and federal criminal case law update podcast. I'm your host, Jeremy Lesnetsky of Shore Scene Lesnetsky & Guy. And each week, I'm going to release one episode reviewing the previous week's Florida DCA and Florida Supreme Court decisions, and one episode reviewing the previous week's 11th Circuit Court of Appeals and U.S. Supreme Court decisions. So whether you're on your way to court, taking a jog, or otherwise have some time to spare, join me each week to get your dose of the latest criminal case opinions. Welcome back to the Side of the Crime. We are talking about our Florida criminal law update episode for the week of December 5th through December 9th, 2022. And as we're winding down towards the end of the year, it looks like the DCAs are also winding down. We only had 7 cases that came out this week with opinions that we're going to talk about. There were 3 out of the first DCA, there were 3 out of the second, and 1 out of the fourth. So no Florida Supreme Court cases this week, no third and no fifth DCA cases. So we're going to start off today with Luster v. State. This is a Florida first DCA case that was released December 7th, 2022. And Luster is a burglary of a dwelling case out of Leon County. Mr. Luster appealed his burglary of a dwelling conviction, arguing that the trial court erred in answering a jury question asking whether all dwellings are structures. When the jury asked the trial court if a dwelling is a structure, the trial court answered yes. Mr. Luster argues that this was error. Burglary is defined in Section 810.02, subsection 1B1, as entering a dwelling, a structure, or a conveyance with the intent to commit an offense therein, unless the premises are at the time open to the public or the defendant is licensed or invited to enter. A structure is defined in 810.011, subsection 1, as a building of any kind, either temporary or permanent, which has a roof over it, together with the curtilage thereof. A dwelling is defined in section 810.011, subsection 2, as a building or conveyance of any kind, including any attached porch, whether such building or conveyance is temporary or permanent, mobile or immobile, which has a roof over it, and is designed to be occupied by people lodging therein at night, together with the curtilage thereof. The definition of dwelling fully encompasses the definition of structure. If it is a dwelling, it is necessarily a structure. So the trial court did not err in answering the jury question in the affirmative. So case affirmed. Our second case today is State v. McLaney. This is a Florida first DCA case that was released December 6, 2022. McLaney is a downward departure case out of Walton County. Mr. McLaney was a treasurer at a Baptist church. For nearly 4 years, he stole over $188,000 in church funds by diverting them to his own personal use. He was charged with fraud over $50,000, he pled guilty, and he had a sentencing hearing. At that hearing, the trial court downward departed from the guidelines, stating that Mr. McLaney had shown remorse, and the event was isolated in that he was only charged with 1 count of fraud. The trial court sentenced Mr. McLaney to 5 years probation with a 3-year suspended prison sentence. Maybe the fact that Mr. McLaney's mother paid $165,000 of the restitution before sentencing factored into the court's decision. But it wasn't listed as a factor the trial court considered, and it wasn't factored in by the first DCA. At any rate, the state wasn't happy with the sentence, so they appealed. A trial court can't impose a downward departure unless there are mitigating circumstances or factors that justify it. A list of permissible mitigating factors are enumerated in Section 921.0026, and this list is not exhaustive. One of the factors that appears to be what was relied on by the trial court is that the offense was committed in an unsophisticated manner and was an isolated incident for which the defendant has shown remorse. The first DCA has held that a defendant must show all 3, unsophisticated manner, isolated incident, and remorse. Here, the first DCA held that competent substantial evidence did not support the trial court's findings. The first found that the crime was not unsophisticated because it has previously held in State v. Hollinger that a business office manager who stole more than $50,000 by writing petty checks from the employer's trust account and depositing them in his own personal bank account was not unsophisticated because that defendant took several distinctive and deliberate steps that were repeated on numerous occasions, and even though that defendant didn't take any elaborate steps to hide the actions, it was still not committed in an unsophisticated manner. Here, Mr. McClaney's fraud was ongoing for almost 4 years. He used his position of trust, he removed charges from the records to avoid detection, and he took several distinct and deliberate steps that were repeated on numerous occasions. So under Hollinger, Mr. McClaney's offense was not unsophisticated. The first DCA also found that competent substantial evidence did not support the finding of an isolated incident. Here, the court found that the fact that Mr. McClaney was only charged with one count did not mean that the underlying acts that were ongoing for almost 4 years can be deemed a single isolated incident. Because the incident was ongoing for almost 4 years and involved multiple incidents within those 4 years, this was not an isolated incident for mitigating circumstance purposes. So because the trial court erred on two of the three factors, and Mr. McClaney needed all three to prevail, case reversed and remanded. Our third case today is Williams v. State. This is a Florida first DCA case that was released December 8, 2022. Williams is a 3.850 comment on a defendant's right to remain silent case out of Nassau County. Mr. Williams was convicted of sexual battery, and his case was affirmed on direct appeal. He subsequently filed a 3.850 motion for post-conviction relief based on ineffective assistance of counsel, claiming that his attorney failed to object and move for a mistrial when the prosecutor commented on his right to remain silent. The post-conviction court denied the motion, and Mr. Williams appealed to the first DCA. At trial, two officers testified that when they responded to Mr. Williams' home regarding the allegations of sexual battery, Mr. Williams walked away, went inside his residence, and refused to allow the police to enter the residence. Mr. Williams' attorney objected to relevancy. The state argued that the evidence went towards Mr. Williams' consciousness of guilt, and this argument was made in front of the jury. The trial court overruled the objection. The Florida Supreme Court held in State v. Horwitz that a defendant's pre-arrest, pre-Miranda silence cannot be used against him as substantive evidence of consciousness of guilt. So here, Mr. Williams' attorney was deficient for failing to object to the prosecutor's comment that was made in front of the jury, but that is only the first prong of the Strickland standard for ineffective assistance of counsel cases. The second prong is prejudice. And here the first DCA found that there was no prejudice. There was testimony from two victims of charged offenses and one collateral evidence victim, and evidence that Mr. Williams sent a letter to his baby's mama asking her to contact the victims to apologize and to ask them to change their stories. So the first DCA found this to be strong evidence of guilt that would not have been affected by the error of his attorney in failing to object to the comment on silence, because even if his attorney had objected and asked for a mistrial, there is no reasonable probability that a mistrial would have been granted. Case affirmed. Our fourth case today is Cabrera v. State. This is a Florida 2nd DCA case that was released December 7, 2022. Cabrera is a 3.800 subsection A motion to correct illegal sentence case out of Manatee County involving 1020 life. Mr. Cabrera was charged with second-degree murder with a firearm and aggravated battery with a firearm. A jury convicted him as charged and made a specific finding that he discharged the firearm resulting in death or great bodily harm. The trial court sentenced Mr. Cabrera to life on the second-degree murder count and 30 years concurrent with the 25-year mandatory minimum on the aggravated battery count. Mr. Cabrera filed a 3.800 subsection A motion, arguing that the mandatory minimum sentence is illegal because the information as it related to the aggravated battery only alleged that Mr. Cabrera discharged a firearm, which comes with a 20-year mandatory minimum, and it did not allege that the discharge resulted in death or serious bodily injury, which comes with a 25-to-life mandatory minimum. Unfortunately for Mr. Cabrera, the second DCA found that he used the wrong tool for his labor. A Rule 3.800 Subsection A motion must involve a court's patent lack of authority or jurisdiction, a violation of the sentencing maximums provided by the legislature, or a violation of some other fundamental right resulting in a person's wrongful imprisonment. In Martinez v. State, the Florida Supreme Court held that this type of error in a charging document does not result in an illegal sentence as contemplated in Rule 3.800 Subsection A. Rather than a 3.800 motion, Mr. Cabrera should have challenged the error on direct appeal. Case affirmed. Our fifth case today is Roberts v. State. This is a Florida 2nd DCA case that was released December 7, 2022. Roberts is a waiver of a jury trial case out of Hillsborough County. Mr. Roberts was charged with battery. At a status hearing, where Mr. Roberts was not present, his attorney requested a bench trial. Mr. Roberts was subsequently convicted and sentenced to 270 days following his trial before the trial court. Mr. Roberts appealed to the 2nd DCA, arguing that the trial court erred by accepting his waiver of his right to a jury trial without his presence. A defendant's right to a jury trial is constitutionally protected under the Sixth Amendment and Article 1, Section 22 of the Florida Constitution. For a waiver to be effective, it must be knowing, voluntary, and intelligent, and requires either a written waiver signed by the defendant or an oral waiver after a proper colloquy with the trial court. At a colloquy, a judge should focus on the value of a jury trial and make the defendant aware of the likely consequences of the waiver. An attorney cannot waive a client's right to a jury trial on the client's behalf. Here, there was no colloquy with Mr. Roberts, and there was no written waiver signed by him in the record, so case reversed and remanded for a new trial. Our sixth case today is Rubright v. State. This is a Florida 2nd DCA case that was released December 7, 2022. Rubright is a 3.850 case out of Pinellas County involving failure to instruct the client on PRR consequences resulting in rejection of a plea offer. Mr. Rubright was charged with attempted robbery and the state offered him 72 months on the day of trial. He rejected the offer and entered a plea straight up to the trial court instead. So Mr. Rubright pled guilty and he was passed for sentencing. Before sentencing, the state notified the court that Mr. Rubright was prison releasee reoffender eligible, so Mr. Rubright moved to withdraw his plea and the trial court granted that motion. The prosecutor then offered Mr. Rubright 15 years, which was the mandatory minimum as a prison releasee reoffender, and that sentence would run concurrent with three other cases that Mr. Rubright had pending. So Mr. Rubright pled guilty and was sentenced to 15 years as a PRR pursuant to that plea agreement. He then filed a 3.850 motion arguing that his attorney was ineffective for not advising him that he qualified as a PRR and faced a 15-year mandatory minimum when the state made the original offer. And had he known, he would have accepted the 72-month state offer. The post-conviction court denied the motion, finding that it could not bind the state to its original 72-month offer, and therefore there was no prejudice to Mr. Rubright. On appeal, the 2nd DCA began with analyzing its decision in Cahootka v. State, where it held that the post-conviction court erred in that case by concluding that events that happened after Mr. Cahootka rejected the state's offer overcame any prejudice that might have been caused by the attorney's deficient performance. The post-conviction court must look at whether there was prejudice at the time of the deficient performance, not after. So here, the post-conviction court should have determined whether Mr. Rubright was prejudiced when the state offered him 72 months, which the court didn't do. So there was error. But the court warned Mr. Rubright, "Beware of what you ask for." In pleading guilty to the attempted robbery pursuant to a plea agreement, he also pled guilty to three other cases, and all sentences were run concurrent to the 15-year sentence. If Mr. Rubright wins on his 3.850 motion on remand and withdraws his plea, the state is not bound by any of the terms of that plea agreement for any of the four cases. And Judge Lucas gave a concurring opinion addressing his displeasure with the current state of the law as it relates to the prejudice prong of Strickland. Quoting Justice Scalia in Fry, he sympathized with the trial courts and attorneys who must, on remand, look into a crystal ball to try to predict how things would have played out if counsel's performance hadn't been deficient to determine whether the defendant was prejudiced under the second prong of Strickland. But in this case, that is exactly what the trial court is going to have to determine upon remand in Mr. Rubright's case. Case reversed and remanded. Our seventh and final case today is Wagner v. State. This is a Florida 4th DCA case that was released December 7th, 2022. Wagner is a fellow officer rule lawfulness of the DUI stop case out of Broward County. Ms. Wagner was involved in an accident where a public safety aide first arrived on the scene. The public safety aide requested an officer, who arrived shortly thereafter, conducted a DUI investigation, and arrested Ms. Wagner for DUI with property damage based on that officer's observations and what the public safety aide told him. A public safety aide is not a deputized police officer, and they do not have powers to arrest. The fellow officer rule, codified for DUI purposes in Section 901.15, Subsection 5, allows one officer to rely on the information provided by another law enforcement officer to develop probable cause for a warrantless DUI arrest. And that doesn't extend to non-deputized public safety aides that do not have the power to arrest. Here, no law enforcement officer saw Ms. Wagner behind the wheel. Therefore, there was no probable cause to arrest her for DUI. Case reversed and remanded. And that's a wrap. I'm your host, Jeremy Lesnetsky with Shorstein, Lesnetsky & Guyon. And this was another episode of the Site of the Crime podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please hit the like button. And if you'd like to keep up to date on all the latest criminal law cases, subscribe to the Site of the Crime. And if you like the show, please review us. This will help your colleagues find us, and they too can stay up to date. Each week, we'll release separate Florida and federal criminal law episodes with the previous week's court opinions. Look in the episode description for timestamps for each case in each jurisdiction. Thanks for joining us at the Site of the Crime.